Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my fantastic co-host, Al McDonald. And Al, I know you are waiting for the nice weather to arrive because you just can't wait to get out on your bike, can you?
Oh my goodness, it's been a trial so far this year because the weather has just not been good. So hopefully things will take a turn and things will improve. But that being said, we've got podcasts ahead of us, so that makes the day brighter already.
Yes, my favorite day of the week. Sometimes it's the week, sometimes it's the month, depending on how many people we're talking to. But speaking of people that we're speaking to, oh my goodness, I'm so excited to speak to our guest today. Jenny DeForno is joining us on the show. Jenny, welcome to the podcast.
Oh gosh, Robin and Al, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited. This one I'm really excited about.
Well, I'm going to do a brief intro, but I do want to dive right into it. So Jenny DeForno is the Chief People Officer at Touch Bistro, where she touches everything people and culture. In addition to her corporate leadership, Jenny serves as the Program Director for Venture Talent at the Schulich School of Business's Venture Academy, where she designed and teaches a masterclass focused on practical strategies for growing venture-backed companies. Again, welcome to the show. I so appreciate you doing this because we just met. We've had fantastic conversations online. And my regret is we didn't hit record that first time. So now we're recording. Now we're official.
Thank heavens. That was the hot takes version. So this will be the toned down, reasonable version you get.
There we go. The very professional, of course.
That's
yes,
right.
Here we go.
My hair okay?
Looks fantastic. Better than Robin's.
There we go. So let's start at the beginning. You've spent nearly 25 years working with startups and scale-ups, as well as supporting founders in the venture world. Can you maybe start at the beginning? Can you walk us through your career journey and what drew you to specialize in people and culture? Because I think that's a really good starting point.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, that's a long time ago. I often call myself an accidental tourist in people and culture. I'd done my undergraduate degree. I'd gone abroad to do my postgraduate work, and I'd applied to law school, and that's the path I thought I was going down. But I decided to take a year off to work. I'd been in school for 5 years. I needed a break. And that's when I started in an executive search. And so I was in executive search for about 5 years. And I often say to people, it was like a mini MBA that I didn't have to pay for, that paid me. And one of the things that just profoundly impacted me in that time was how much leadership could impact and change the trajectory of a business. And we were doing like really senior level searches, like the CEO of Rogers, for example, when Nadir Mohammed went in, or VP level and above. And so having access to these amazing leaders and watching the impact that they had on organizations was just transformative. And it became like this new unit of economics for me, you know, that leadership changes the trajectory of business. And so I fell in love with it, to be honest with you. So I did that for 5 years, loved every single moment of it. But then I got to this place in my career where I was like, we're going out, we're finding all these great people. We throw them over the wall to these companies. And then I don't know what happens, right? Like I know great things happen, but I don't know how the sausage gets made. And so it sparked in me just this really intense curiosity. And so I think that's key, right? Is that my career path hasn't been about anything I've plotted out or what my next step would be. It has been letting my curiosity lead me, right? It was about falling in love with certain problems or questions and letting that sort of lead me to my next best choice. And so that sort of led me to go, oh, I wonder what happens on the other side. And so through introductions, met the VP of HR over at Monero Solutions, Joni Mitchell. She brought me in to head up recruitment. And so rule number two of, you know, my career trajectory is also just saying yes to things. So she interviewed me and she's, I'd like you to be my head of recruitment. Excellent. Wonderful. I can do that in my sleep. And she's like, you're pretty smart. You want to do leadership development too? And I was just too young to know better. And I was just too curious to ever say no. And I was like, sure, yeah, I can figure that out. And so spent a great four, almost 5 years there, learning from one of the best, a really tremendous company. And then left there because I had the opportunity to head up my own HR department. And who doesn't like that chance? And so something that I could build from the ground up. But this time, this was my first interaction with a founder-led company. So it was Infotech Research Group, and it was founder. The founder was still the CEO. And so this was a high-growth, high-trajectory company, opening new offices, hiring people around the world. In 18 months, we doubled and tripled in size in terms of employee count. I built the HR function from the ground up. And so it was just a real exciting opportunity to sort of be able to get more involved in the strategy and the direction and the focus of building that organization. And that's where I caught the bug for startups. That was where the excitement, like a Monero solution, I was learning from some of the best, but there were rules and they were a little bit more rigid and there were processes and it was a little bit slower. But here, all of a sudden, anything was possible, right? It was the economy of great ideas in the business. And so that was really exciting to me. And so did that for about 5 years. And then there was an idea on a napkin in a Starbucks, as cliched as that sounds, and that Starbucks is no longer there, but the company still exists. And an old friend and colleague from university days, Randy Cass, was building a company that would become Nest Wealth. And it was just an idea on a napkin. And so for the first year and a half, it was just him and I. And we did Series A, we did debt financing, we acquired a company, and we built a company. They've exited. They were just recently bought out. I wasn't there for that part of the journey, but I spent 7 years building that company with him. And in those early days, again, back to curiosity and back to maybe not having the common sense to say no to big challenges. We didn't need HR. We didn't need a full-time HR person. And so I was building HR off the side of my desk in terms of we needed payroll, we needed contracts, we needed, you know, a hiring process, et cetera. But the reality is that wasn't going to take all my time. So I headed up customer experience. So it was also my first opportunity to head up an area that wasn't just on the people and culture side. So I built our customer experience team from the ground up. I often tell people, I bought Calendly directly from the CEO. That's how old I am, right? It was just this little tiny startup at the time. So all the tooling, all the SLAs, you know, with our back office providers, et cetera. And so that was just a tremendous, tremendous experience, right? And I think aside from just the learning curve that you go through when you're building a company from scratch, there's also the very human side of it where you begin to understand the highs and lows of it. You know, there were days we would walk out of the office and we were just the most brilliant people there were, right? Like, this is going to, we're going to make millions. We're building something that's going to change the face of financial services in Canada. And then literally the next day, I would be in my car for 10 minutes before I drove home in tears because I'm sure I don't know what I'm doing. I'm in over my skis. I've done something that's probably going to bankrupt the company and my family. And so those big highs and lows. So it was also this really profound moment where you begin to understand the startup journey, not just for all of the policies, the procedures, the structures that you put into place, but the very human element of startup life and the toll that it takes and the things that you need to do to support people in the business during those really high growth times. And then Omer's Ventures came knocking. And to be quite honest, I had no interest in venture. It seems everybody wants to get into venture except for me. I was probably a little bit rude, but to me, I was a builder. I built companies. That's what I did. And, you know, Damian Steele was the managing director, convinced me that they were building something different. right? That they were building something that was really founder first, that was really looking to bring in a talent partner who was going to be able to provide the assistance that I really wish I would have had in those early days from our investors in terms of supports, learnings that would help them sort of accelerate their growth. And so he's like, instead of doing this for one company, you can help do it for an ecosystem. And so that's sort of what got me excited about it. And so I found myself saying yes. And what a tremendous platform Moments Ventures is. And Damien was just true to his word. And offices in Palo Alto, offices in the UK. So when I talk about 90 plus portfolio companies, that would be in Europe, across North America, one or two in Singapore. So really opened my eyes. So there's one thing to experience, like to actually have your own practical experience, lived experience about what worked, what didn't work, your insights. But it's something else. It's such a supercharge to now be able to see the patterns across geographies, across different models, to kind of actually test out what does actually work more times than not. Where do you see the best founders and teams? What traits do they have? What practices really seem to move the dial more than others? And so like that pattern recognition was just this supercharge I didn't even know that I needed in my career. And so very grateful for. And then Touch Bistro was a portfolio company of Omer's Ventures. And so I'd been an advisor to Samir, the CEO, over here at Touch Bistro for about 2 years before I joined. And early when we met, he said, if you ever want to come work for me, come on over. And it just was never the right time. And then when Damien Steele left Omer's Ventures, Samir called me up and he said, I don't know if Damien leaving changes anything for you, but if it does, I'd still love you to come work for me. And so that was the moment where I thought, you know, after just over 4 years in venture, almost 4.5 years in venture, it was time to get back to building. And I couldn't pick a better CEO to do that with. So here I am, back building again.
What an amazing journey. There's so much in that answer. We could probably have a, you know, an hour conversation or two just on what you touched on in your first answer. But I want to go back to a couple of things. Number one is the selfish questions, because I love travel and I love being abroad. And you worked or studied abroad? Which was it?
So I've studied abroad. So at the University of Lisbon.
Oh, Lisbon. Yes.
How exciting.
Yeah. It was fantastic. So
pastel de natas every day, I'm assuming, or at least once a week.
I might have packed on a few extra pounds.
Yeah.
The food was definitely a drawing card, that's for sure.
Yeah, not a bad place to study abroad. So yeah, very jealous. I'm sure we'll have more Portugal stories after this once we stop recording. I did want to touch on something that I have a belief in, and it's the reason why we named the podcast Success Leaves Clues, because I have a belief that you surround yourself with successful people, you model their behaviors, you model their beliefs, and you'll reap similar rewards. And early on, it sounds like not only early on in your career, but throughout your career, you've had exposure to very successful people. And if I were to say to you, success leaves clues, true or false, I have an idea what you'd say, but what would you say? Because it sounds like you've just had the benefit of being around really successful people, and that has clearly had an impact on your trajectory.
1,000%. You couldn't have a better name for your podcast. If I believe in a truth, it is definitely that. Success definitely leaves clues. And so the best way to discover those clues is by surrounding yourself or putting yourself in a position where you can learn from the best leaders. And so I'm stealing this from Jack Ma of Alibaba fame. And basically his advice to anybody really early in their career is optimize for who you work for, right? Because that is how you're going to learn and grow the fastest, that when you optimize who you work for. And so absolutely. So as much as I've been led by curiosity and just by saying yes to things, even if I didn't know if I could quite pull them off, just being brave and saying yes, the other third truth of my career is I've optimized for fantastic leadership. I've optimized from people that I thought were ethical and decent and kind, but also super smart and talented, and where I knew that going into those roles that I was going to learn as much as I was going to contribute, and making sure that it wasn't just, oh, I can come in and blow this off the charts, but about what is it that I'm going to learn? what will be new to me? What will I now have in my toolkit that I didn't have before? So, so, so important. Optimize who you work for every single time.
Well, that resonates with me because clearly 20 years ago when Al sought me out, he was very interested in what he could learn from my leadership. So I'm sure Al feels very good 20 years later. But before, I know Al wants to carry on and get into the conversation, but there was one other thing I wanted to touch on. And that's, you know, you said being in over your skis and saying yes to things that you didn't necessarily know how to do. We've heard a lot of people that we chat with on this podcast about imposter syndrome. And I've also chatted about, not so much on the podcast, but people in general outside of, you know, these offline conversations. And sometimes there are people who just say no, or they're very nervous about saying yes. What would you say, especially to younger people coming up in their career, about that opportunity to say yes, even if they're terrified?
So a couple of things, right? So first of all, don't say yes to things that you're not genuinely interested in.
Good advice.
Like there is a caveat to it, right? So there's that old saying, fall in love with the problem, not the solution. And so if you fall in love with that problem, like, oh my gosh, you need to change your leadership development programs and how you quantify leadership in the organization and how you support leadership in the organization. I am so fascinated by that. Because like you have to say yes, you have to be brave enough to say yes, but you also have to have enough passion for it that you know that you're going to do the hard work, that you're going to be able to dig in, that you're going to have the passion and enthusiasm that's going to be required for the level of learning you're going to need to lean into in terms of being able to actually get to where it needs to be, right? And so yes, say yes more. So if it's doubts on your capabilities, don't let that happen, right? Like, don't say no for those reasons. The only reason you would say no is when you kind of go, yeah, but I'm not interested in that. Or that doesn't excite
Smart.
Me,
yeah.
Right? So don't just say yes to everything because there's an opportunity cost to that too, right? And the opportunity cost is you can't say yes to something else. So when you are saying yes, make sure that you have a genuine passion for it. That is a problem that is worthy of your time and your energy and your dedication. And if you're sure of that, then absolutely say yes. And don't let doubts of whether you're up to the task, don't let those crowd your thoughts.
I love your mindset of learning and curiosity. I think that's a great approach. I wanted to go back. One of the things you talked about before was your time at Omer's Ventures, and you talked about patterns and seeing things that repeated. And can you just talk about from your time there, were there things that you saw that set the great teams apart from the rest? And what were they?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So a couple of things I'll say on this is, so the first thing about either a founder or a founding team is singular passion for the business, right? They have to get up because some days are hard. Like I've been on this journey, and as much as I loved what we were building, some days are so, so hard. So if you don't have a passion for it, if you can't latch on to the excitement of what you're building, then you don't have anything to sustain you when it gets a little bit tough, right? And so I say passion because I think it also ties into your resilience. It ties into when you're really passionate about something, all of a sudden you get really resilient around it. And so each of these founders and founding teams just showed immense passion. And that passion also translated into deep knowledge, right? Because they're so passionate about the company that they were building, they're talking to every customer. They're talking to other organizations that are building similar things. They're more curious. They're more hungry. So passion was a big thing that I saw. They're excellent communicators. I can't overstate that. And I don't mean they write a nice email or they put together a nice deck, but I mean they are communicators where they can talk to investors and compel them and sort of raise the capital, but they're excellent communicators so that they can go out and find the right talent and attract the right talent to their business. And they're great communicators, so they're able, once they hire those wonderful people, they're able to align them in terms of the mission of the organization and what they're trying to achieve. And they are really focused on continuing to over-communicate in a lot of ways to make sure that that alignment is maintained in hyper-growth stage. So they're fabulous, fabulous communicators. And then another thing I would call out is they also tend to be very self-aware. The best. So they always make me a little nervous when they know everything, they've seen everything, they've done everything, we all have our superpowers and we all have things we're not so great at, right? And so this level of self-awareness where they sort of understand what it is they have to contribute to the business, where they're weak, now they can go and hire for that. Now they can learn how to get better at certain pieces if they're not already, whether that's through a coach or a mentor or whatever the case might be. So passion, communication, and self-awareness are really high up there on the pattern recognition of the skills that those founders and founding teams that are the most successful have, for sure.
So I want to, that's great, by the way. I want to go back a little bit to a question that we get quite often is, and you're in this space, you're in the people space for startup companies. One of the things is, when should we bring in that HR expertise? And what I think I've heard from you so far is you are there at the beginning in a few of these situations and you are in that space. So by definition, you've brought that to the table right off the bat. How much do you think that has helped? So I'm kind of asking you to, you know, blow your own horn here a little bit.
So, oh gosh, you're putting me in
kind of put you on the spot,
position.
Didn't I?
This is not an infomercial. So first of all, it is my belief that you should bring in people and culture. So there tends to be the standard, right? And it's just a default standard and it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And the tipping point seems to be about 50 people, right? That by the time you get to around 50 people, that's where all of a sudden you have a second layer of management that starts to emerge, right? So now you have your leaders, but now you're hiring managers under that who are managing teams of people. And so now you start to need a little bit more process around communication. You need a little bit more policies and procedures about how people interact. You should have already been thinking about values and cultures, but now you've got to really be diligent and focused on how you embed that throughout the organization, et cetera. So the default textbook answer is about 50 people. To me, if you have the ability to bring in a people leader sooner, I recommend you do it 100%, because by the time you've already reached 50 people, if you haven't been focused on the right things, like being intentional about your values and your culture, et cetera, you could already be drifting a little bit off the tracks. And so it is an absolute luxury at earlier stages if you can bring someone in who sits with the CEO as a real and true partner to the CEO. You got to hire a people leader who can be a real true partner to the CEO in terms of crafting what the company is going to look and feel like, the type of people you want to hire, the type of culture you want to create, the type of outcomes, and how you build the scaffolding, in essence, that supports those outcomes. And the earlier you can do that, the absolute better.
Okay, so to put you on the hot seat a little bit, great answer. You kind of danced around what effect you had. So I'll put you on the hot seat a little bit. Like, what effect do you think it did have on some of these businesses that you, with a people background, were there from the beginning?
I think it had a great impact. Surprise, surprise. I won't bury the lead. Look, the luxury, so like just me and the CEO and we're starting out. And so now we've got to assemble a leadership team, right? Who's going to be our first technical lead? Who's going to be our first product lead? And so to be, instead of like a CEO just kind of going, I'm not really sure how to pull that all together. I know so-and-so, versus actually running a process or being thoughtful about how the pieces are going to fit together. And so the fact that I was there with him as we brought in each and every leader into that organization, it helped to create hyper alignment right off the start, right? Mm-hmm. Because we were very intentionally not just hiring talented people, but we were also hiring people who had a passion for the business. We were hiring people that we understood the difficulty that lied ahead of us. So we were hiring people that were also really committed to the business. And so because we were able to build that right off the start, it's almost like we had a jump start on values and culture, mm-hmm. right? Because we were so intentional about who we were bringing together, why we were bringing them together. And I think in the early days, what it helped us do is accelerate so much more quickly into building, because we got to that hyper alignment much sooner, I believe, than if we hadn't had that same people lens. And so instead of, you know, the growth as you get to know each other, just sort of step functioning up, it was like we could really lean into that curve in those early days. And so I think it was a huge advantage to us. I also think that it helped create clarity in terms of our mission and our values. And as we continue to grow and expand, really drove forward the rest of our recruiting efforts and the type of talent that we were bringing into the organization. So I think it just got us off to a better start, a faster start. And I think it also, although I won't ever be able to technically prove this, but I think it also then saved us from the cleanup job that you normally have to do once you hit 40 or 50, yeah. Right? And the opportunity cost that comes with that, because now you've got to spend so much time. Oh, we hired the wrong person. Oh, and so now we have to take two or three steps back. Or now unintentionally, we've created this type of culture. And so how do we kind of walk this back a little bit and refocus the energy of the team? And so it wasn't just about, hey, this is what we're building. We've got really great clarity and alignment, and now we can lean into what we're here to do a lot more quickly. We're also saving ourselves a bunch of this pain and paying this organizational debt or people debt down the road. And so I think it's kind of twofold in that way.
Jenny, I'd love to continue down this path, because earlier you told us about Nest Wealth, and you're there at stage zero when it's being drawn on a napkin in that Starbucks. Yeah. Great story, by the way. Starbucks isn't there, but the company's still around, even though they just got acquired. But hey, success. That's awesome. So you've been there from stage zero to over 1,500 people. Can you talk to us about...
Oh, no, that wasn't 1,500.
I know that one wasn't, but companies that you've worked with in general.
Yeah.
Right? From zero stage to 1,500.
Yeah.
What are some of the biggest people-related challenges that emerged during that rapid scaling that you've seen and experienced?
Do you know what? Number one is alignment, for sure. And so as you're growing so quickly, oftentimes what happens is everybody's running in their own directions. You know, products over there building, sales is over here, sort of selling the product. And it's really hard to make sure that you're all sort of moving in the same direction, right? And that you've got the appropriate feedback loops to make sure those different functional areas are not only connected, receiving and sending out feedback to the other teams, being able to collaborate, being able to innovate together, but also making sure that they're all sort of aligned in terms of what the overall goal and mission is. So many times you can do, you know, employee survey after employee survey, and almost always in the top three in terms of issues to be improved is communication in an organization. And what that tells me, okay, so communication, yes, we need to have more town halls, or we need to have more one-on-ones, or we need to, but like the bigger question is, okay, so what does communication mean? Why do people want communication? Because they want to understand, right? Because they want to understand what's happening in the business, what's changing in the business, what our goals are in the business. They want to understand, right? Like people aren't asking for communication for communication's sake, right? And so that's all about alignment to me. And it's all about making sure that everybody is growing in the same direction and moving in the same direction. So common in high growth startups is all of a sudden you start to see people going in different directions, working at cross purposes, and then you start to lose cycles because product went down this direction in their roadmap, and you have sales over here going, I can't sell that. That's not what our customers are asking for, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got to step back weeks, potentially months, potentially quarters in terms of remediating that, right? And getting everybody back online. So alignment is one of the biggest things that I see fall apart when you're in hyperscale.
One of the things, I'm around a lot of entrepreneurs, and I love being around entrepreneurs. It's fantastic. The energy is amazing. We were with someone yesterday downtown, just like came out of that meeting with so much energy. But there's ego there. There's a lot of ego there. And I think for...
What?
A surprise. Yeah, I know. Everyone will be shocked at that. And I think there's ego for a good reason. And I think it's needed, right? Especially like you said, there's days where you just, oh my gosh, like everything's going wrong. They still got to go up and keep going. How do you manage? Because you just talked about it. Communication is very important. But I've seen it firsthand. There are people, there are entrepreneurs out there who are, this is my vision. This is what has to happen. You don't need to know everything. Just go do your job that I've hired you to do. So how do you balance those egos with the need for communication when that entrepreneur doesn't necessarily understand from the people space why that communication is so important?
Oh boy, a lot to unpack there. So one of the things I will also say to you, so yeah, I don't love the word ego, but yes, I also know what you're saying. Ego gets in the way, right? Conviction, yes. Enthusiasm for the problem you're solving, yes. But tying it back to an earlier question that I was asking, like self-awareness, really important, right? In terms of understanding, being able to say, yes, I can have high conviction. Yes, I can be really enthusiastic about this problem that I'm solving. Yes, I need to trust a lot of my own guts and instincts. But I also need to be reflective on this and sort of understand where my strengths are in this, in the ways in which, because you know what, founder, you don't scale. You don't scale. And so as you hire that team, you need to be thoughtful about who you're bringing in, why you're bringing them in, and you're bringing them in to contribute to the business, not to stay in their lane, not to just, you know, I want you to go over and execute on that. You should be wanting to bring in people that are going to be able to 10X, 20X your business, right? So you need to shift that mindset in terms of, I need to go find the people who are going to execute on my vision. And instead go, I'm going to go find people who are aligned with my vision directionally, who are excited about my vision, but people who are also going to bring some unique strengths to the table, who are going to help me explore, expand, and be successful in that vision, right? And so I would challenge every founder to get out of that place of ego and be a little bit more self-reflective and understand that their success is predicated on building that talented bench that's going to help execute on that, right? When you look at patterns across companies, almost all of them, especially early stage seed series A, of companies that are successful, they pivoted 10 times, you know, 5 times, 3 times before they actually find their path that unlock for them, right? And so if you know that, then the reality is, as a founder, you have to be open to the concept that, yes, I have high conviction on this, but I've got to remain open enough. Like, what is the saying? Ideas loosely held, like strong ideas loosely held. So yeah, have that strong idea, but loosely hold it so that you've made space for other people to help come in and contribute and make it even better. So I would challenge that. But yes, like too many of them come in with the hubris of ego versus what I would say is the confidence of conviction.
That's the difference. Yeah, no, I agree.
So that's first, is I would challenge them one-on-one, like from a coaching sort of perspective, and try to open them up to kind of seeing that different perspective. Now, you also, Robin, tied that into communication. And I don't think I've ever worked for a CEO that literally did not say to me, do I have to say it again? Like, I've said this. I said it in this meeting. I said it at this town hall. Why isn't that clear, right? And so I said, you know, communication isn't for you. It isn't to hear yourself talk. It's for the recipient, right? And so there's a reason, like we just came out of a political campaign. And there's a reason why politicians give the same speech over and over and over again on the stump, because it takes people 8, 9, 10, 12 times of hearing the same message before it actually sinks in, before they can actually access it. And the thing about communication, it's got to be consistent. It has to be over a longer period of time. And it's got to be in a multitude of different formats, right? So it's got to be in that town hall. It's got to be in that email. It's got to be in how we reward performance in the organization. It has to be in the talent management discussions. You need to weave that communication through a multitude of different facets of the organization. And if you think you are communicating enough, you need to communicate even more. I've never been in an organization where it's like, why do people not get this? Nope. We just got to keep the talk track going, right? And we just have to make sure we're weaving it through as many employee touch points as possible. And that's the way you stay on track. And that's the way you stay aligned. And that's the way you move the ball forward. Even though sometimes I get that it can feel a little much, but I fundamentally believe it's a huge, huge cornerstone.
I'm glad you went down that path, because I was going to ask you that question and you just answered it. So yeah, that you anticipated my question. You've talked already a lot about some of the truths that you live by, that you've learned, that you adhere to. Is there one leadership principle that you always come back to?
Oh, you know, that's such a tough one.
Are there two leadership principles?
You know, I'm about to say something that I'm going to dislike myself for because it feels so schmaltzy, but I really, really believe in authentic leadership. And so many people, including myself, sometimes struggle with that, right? Being authentic or being vulnerable or being, I'm not even going to use candid, but like clarity is kindness, right? And this notion of you go and you look at Netflix. Netflix has built this hugely successful company on a certain cultural principle, certain values that they hold, and it's over here. And then you've got Zappos, and they also built a tremendously successful company on totally different cultures and values, right? So there isn't just one way to do something. And each of those companies could hire amazing people, attracted amazing people, but they were really profoundly different. I think what people want in life is authenticity. And so they will follow leaders that they believe are being authentic and are being true to themselves. We've all seen those leaders who put certain values on the wall and don't live them, right? Or actually act contrary to them or hold everybody else in the organization accountable to them, but not themselves or senior leaders within the organization, right? And that creates like this real cognitive dissonance in the organization because people can accept a lot of hard things. And people can accept a lot of hard messages. What people can't accept is if they believe they're being lied to or that it's misrepresented. We've all heard of companies out there, right? Where people go, oh, I work for that company. They say they value this. They absolutely do not, right? And so I think one of the greatest things as a founder or as a leader is to build authentically, right? Because that's going to be your biggest superpower. Because people will follow that, the right people, right? Some people might say, oh, this isn't for me. And you know what? That's a great thing. That's a great thing when somebody goes, oh, I see what you're building and how you're building it, but that's not for me. That's 100% okay. It's not going to be for everybody. But those people, your people that resonate with that are going to be even more committed, right? Are going to be in it for the highs and the lows. And so building authentically is just a real, I've tried other ways. Like sometimes I've put on the pretender hat and said, oh my gosh, like I need to be more buttoned down. I need to be more remote and calm and cool and collected and thoughtful. I should speak less. And it just doesn't work for me. And everyone around me can smell it like a mile away. And it feels uncomfortable for me. It feels uncomfortable for the rest of the room. I just can't not be who I am, right? And I get the best results when I am authentically myself. And I have fought with that in my life because I've been told I'm too much or I'm too direct or I'm too, there's a whole big long list of all the twos I am. I'm a lot of twos, too much on a lot of that. And I would tweak that and it just never worked for me. The only thing that has ever worked for me is that authenticity. And I think that goes the same for other leaders. And certainly the leaders that I follow and sign up to work with and do tours of duty with, and certainly in the companies that excel, is they start at a foundation of authenticity.
Well, that's great. I'm blown away. I have nothing to add to that.
Oh, it feels schmaltzy, right? Like, oh, authenticity. Yeah, that's a really good one. But like, it's just, maybe it's trite because it's like, it's just really true.
Yeah.
And honestly, so few people do it. Like people will talk it,
right?
But they're being authentic for an audience, right? Versus like, no, warts and all. Like my team knows I will swear every once in a while. Like, okay.
Earmuffs.
Yeah. That's what I say to my kids. But I don't know my team would do it in the same way. But I show up as who I am with all the enthusiasm, which might be too much, with all the frustrations, which might be too much. But I show up as authentically me, and I think it's made all the difference.
Your passion definitely shows through, Jenny. There's no doubt about that.
So, Jenny, you'll find this funny. So my pretender hat was when I first came into the business, and I would wear, you know, my Oxford shoes and my suit and my tie done up, and I had an empty briefcase, by the way. But I'd show up into the office that I was supposed to show up to, and I'd walk around really quickly because I thought, oh, that'll make me look professional and very busy.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a lot of success early on because that wasn't me, right? Yeah. It was really when I kind of became comfortable with who I am And Al will know, like, I have one of our biggest clients, we're sending each other texts and fire emojis, and we're doing like the big clap when we see, because that's real. Like, I can't, if I try to fake it and be this smooth sales person, that's not going to work. That's just not me. So I love that you brought that up. And I hope people listening will realize, when you're yourself and you find the right place, because maybe not every place is the right place for you, but when you find the right place and you can just be yourself and bring who you are to the business, that's where you're going to succeed, right? So I'm glad you brought that up.
100%.
Really selfishly, because you and I have had some good conversations and I'm just getting to know you, and I don't always get access to people like you. So I work in the benefit space and the wellness space, and I'm always curious what people like yourself are thinking about over the next year or two. So when you think about goals for your people strategy, you know, over the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, are there any support systems like benefits, wellness, or others that you feel this is what needs to evolve to keep up the vision that you have for the company right now?
Yeah, if I think specifically about that space, Robin, I think it's a couple of things. So one, we know that there are more generations in the workforce at one time than have ever been in the workforce before.
What is it, 4 or 5 now?
It's 5 now.
It's 5 now. Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's technically 5 now. We have just hit the 5th.
Wow.
All very different needs, right? And so if I believe that people are our biggest leverage in an organization in terms of our collective success, and if I believe that my people in the organization show up as fully formed adults, right? Like, they have mortgage payments or rent payments, they have elderly parents, they have children. Like, we all have robust lives outside. We are fully formed adults when we come into this process. And we're still serving up benefits and all of these broader services like mental health services or coverage options in the same traditional ways, which is like one size fits all, versus making them, in my mind, more modular and choice driven. And I'm not talking about modular and choice driven because I do know, like, there's HSAs and you get money in it and you get to choose how you spend it. But let's be real, right? Like, most companies have very small HSAs. That $500 doesn't go very far.
Goes really quick. Yeah.
Right? It goes very quick. And so I'm always trying to balance this thought in my head where, look, I want everybody to have some minimal level of coverage that they don't sign away, that makes sure that in the worst of life, that they can't peek around the corner to know or understand what's happening, that they and their families will be taken care of, right? So I want some level of base service for everybody that they don't even maybe know that they need. But beyond that, like, I really want it modular and choice driven in a meaningful way for them that helps them take care of the needs and the priorities in their life. And that also helps them feel seen and cared for in a more material way. And I just haven't seen packages out there that make me excited. They're all driven by some actuarial formula versus actually delivering good. And I get it, because they're businesses. I understand. But at the same time, there's been no real breakthrough or innovation happening in those broader support systems in the last 10 years, from my perspective as an end consumer on behalf of the people I serve, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. And thankfully for us, because it works to our favor, we've walked into so many situations, especially the last 3 years, because I found, kind of coming out of COVID, people were taking a closer look at the benefits plan than they had before. So the conversation is definitely changing. And luckily for us, we walk into so many situations where you look at the plan design and you start asking questions about, why does it look like that? And you find out it's tied to some long forgotten historical objective that's no longer relevant to not only the company objective, but now we have 5 different generations in the workforce. So you're right. There's so much opportunity there. There is some innovation that, you know, I can put you in touch with down the road, but it's, yeah, there's some interesting stuff. But that's interesting because that's consistent with what I'm feeling. There's a lot of people out there, as you know, you were at our event recently. I'm really connected into the chief people officer space. And there's a lot of frustration about, listen, you're not coming to the table and evolving with the rest of the world and the rest of the industry. So that's what really needs to happen. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that I really care about our team, right? And my team that supports me really cares about our team. And we're always trying to look at different ways to serve them and what will serve them best. And we just always feel like we come up with a real dearth of options and solutions. So,
yeah. And I'm the same way, you know, coming in, Aljo and I are partners. And one of the things that we do want people, whether they're with us for a little bit of time or a long time, when you're coming here, we want you to have that elevated experience, right? And part of that is the benefits and culture and things that we do. So again, that's a conversation for offline.
Yes, yes.
Now we have my favorite part of the podcast, which is Al's signature question. And if you're up for it, I'd love to turn it over to Al.
Wonderful. So here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So when you reflect back on your career, what legacy do you want to leave behind? This could be professionally for the organizations you work for. It could be personal.
Can I just tell you, I love this question. Like, I just love this question. Not only do I love this question, I think it's just such a beautiful reflection now, having gotten to know both of you, just a reflection of your attitudes and how you approach life. And so I just think it's so beautiful.
Thank you for that.
Gosh, I want to have so much impact in this life. You know, I'm a mom raising two fantastic kids. And so I think that there's things happening over there. I'll keep it a little bit professional. I think one of the things, like building a company, and the startup life, it's hard. Like, it's really, really hard. And when I started building in the ecosystem now, 15, 20 years ago, it wasn't as robust as it is now. And it was a really lonely endeavor. And so this Shuluk School of Business program, like this Venture Academy that Chris Carter and Cherry Rose Tan have pulled together, is just phenomenal because it's exactly the type of support I would have wanted when I was building a company, right? Suffering from that imposter syndrome, not knowing what I was doing, like this ability to kind of jump ahead. And so you kind of say like, hey, how's that building trees? It's like, if I can share any piece of my experience, any pieces of the wins or the fails, and there's so many of them that I've made along the way, so that somebody else's journey is better. Like, it's not just about that one person going, oh, having that aha moment and going, that really helps me in my journey, but they're building a company, right? And so now it's going to help all of those people. So it becomes that ripple effect, right? That ability to kind of really authentically share those experiences in a way that is useful in service to that next wave of founders and founding teams so that they can build healthier, stronger companies and healthier and stronger teams. It's kind of, I hope, is my way to reach, you know, more than people one-on-one and be able to help create a little bit of a tide change in that experience for them and the type of companies they create. And also, let's face it, we all work for companies, right? Or sometimes we work for ourselves and we spend so much time there. So it's not just that they're going to build these successful companies, hopefully. It's going to be that they're going to create these great experiences for people, these great lives for people. Because let's face it, our jobs are part of our lives. And so if they can lean into that better and all of a sudden, by default, make the lives of the people that work for you better, that would make me really super happy.
Well, what a great answer and a great place to wrap it up.
Well, Jenny, this has been a highlight of my year, meeting you, getting to know you. I feel there's certain people in life, and I've been very fortunate, and the podcast has been a bit of a surprise in that way, that you get to meet people, you connect instantly, you're aligned on values, and just, you know, you feel that energy from other people. And that's what I felt from you the first time we met. I'm so glad we got to record this. For listeners who are interested in more about what we chatted about here today, what's the best way to reach out to you?
LinkedIn. Easy peasy. Find me on LinkedIn. Connect on LinkedIn. I always love to hear from people and always help wherever I can.
Okay, perfect. Well, that does it for today's episode. I think you can tell Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for us, please feel free to give us a call or join in the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here today. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.